I've known this beautiful woman you're going to hear speak today for 20 years, but I didn't really know her until she joined me in this beautiful program. I'd like to introduce my sister, my soul sister, my mentor, and my fellow sufferer in this disease and in this development of program together, Linda from Oklahoma.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I went back before I came to this place, and I listened to every last day speaker. And I listened to Pamela. That was one I listened to. And it is so true what all of those last day speakers or all of the speakers have said, that when you look out and you see the beauty in everyone, it calms me. I'm going to take you on a journey with me today. First of all, I want to thank Judy, I think, Judy W., for inviting me to do this. You know, when the theme is stepping up and see how, and immediately that conjures to me stepping up to give service, I said, oh, sure, I'd love to do that. Thank you. You know where I'm coming from now, don't you? Because that seemed like a long way off, and it seemed like life would not have happened, you know, in between the time that I said yes and the time that I'm actually here. But life did happen. And one thing I've learned in program is that I have to accept life on life's terms. Let me just qualify very quickly. In 2012, January, about mid-January of 2012, I entered a room called See How. I had absolutely no earthly idea what I was getting into, because all I knew was, just give me the silver bullet. I am so tired of this. I can't do it anymore. Just help me get going, and then I'll be okay. I can handle it on my own. So in January of 2012, I went to a meeting. It was foreign to me. I thought, what are these people doing? And they had these readings, and, you know, it's like, can you just hurry up and get to what I came for? Give me what is going to make me thinner. That's why I was there. And then I'll be out of your hair, and I'll go on about my business. Well, I became abstinent February 4th of 2012, and there's a reason why. Between the middle of January and February 4th, I had a grandchild born in there. And one night, my daughter had been through so much false labor, but bingo, finally that little one came. Beautiful little girl, third little girl. But I was just so exhausted, I did not eat one vegetable at night. And my sponsor at that time said, well, you have to start all over. And I was like, are you kidding me? Do you know what my life is like? I don't have time to start your program over. And so I did, reluctantly. My granddaughter was born February 3rd, and so February 4th, I started all over again. February 4th of 2012. I have, by the grace of God, a 50-pound weight release. My name is Linda, and I'm a grateful abstaining compulsive eater. You know, after I got in there and I started, I was told that there were these steps. Okay, well, let's just get on with it. Okay, where are the steps? Let's get them going. You mean in 30 days you want me to answer 30 questions? Do you realize I have a life called work? I don't have time for this. I've got to read what Oprah says is going to be the next thing that's going to make me thin. I've got to pick up the next book and find out what I need to do. I've got to flip on Dr. Oz because I know that he has something in store for me. But you know, when I got there, I did finally, reluctantly, surrender. And life has not been the same since. So when I was thinking about preparing for this and stepping up, you know, I have used Webster's Dictionary more since I started this program than any other time in school in my whole life. And so I went out and looked at the word step. And so there were lots of different phrases that were used with step, like step in time and step down. That means like relinquish or give up my control. Really? Or to step in, meaning to get involved, or to intervene. I was very good at intervening. To break step, which meant to interrupt or cease walking or marching in step. And it was really referring to the military, you know, as they passed by the parade stand. Then after they passed by that parade stand, they could break step. You were all my parade stand. And as long as I was in front of you or anyone out there in the world, I didn't break step. Because I was not about to let anybody see who Linda was. I wanted you to see this happy, put together, well-educated wife, mother, teacher, consultant. Then I saw another phrase, being in step, moving in time to a rhythm. You know, since I've been in program, it's not moving to my rhythm. That's been a hard thing for me to learn. It's God's rhythm. That's what it's all about. Or another one, take it a step further. A step further? After I got through 30 questions, it was like, whew, thank goodness that's over. And then I had this step up ceremony, and my husband said, well, what are you going to do tonight? And I said, I have no idea. I'm doing some kind of ceremony where I'm supposed to bring a candle, and I don't know, maybe they're going to chant and throw chicken bones. I have no idea. I did not know what was going on. Then there was the phrase baby steps, and that's how working C-How has been for me, taking some baby steps. It's also been about taking two steps forward and one step backward on some days. Well, I want everybody, as I go through this journey, which already seems pretty non-conventional as I've gone back and listened to other speakers, I'm going to take you down what got me. There were lots of steps that I traveled before I walked over that threshold. But I'm going to pose a question to you. And this question is, when was the last time you did something for the first time? When was the last time you did something for the first time? Let me go back and tell you, I'm a baby boomer. I turned 66 in December. And I think that people my age, there are lots of Lindas out there. And my father, my biological father, told me the reason why was because all the soldiers were coming home from war. And Linda Darnell was a very wonderful actress that I guess that the soldiers saw movies and she was in them. And so there were lots of Lindas that are are about my age. Where are the Lindas? See, there we are, lots of Lindas this age. Well, let me tell you a little bit about me and where I have come from. I was a middle child, older brother 3 years, younger brother 8 years, but I was the apple of my daddy's eye. And, you know, I live in Oklahoma where there's cattle, there's oil, not as much as there used to be, but there's cattle and oil. And he used to say, yeah, this is my little one. She's my little heifer. I thought it was a compliment. I saw that cow on a calendar, and it was built low to the ground, and it was husky. It was thick. And I thought that was probably a good thing. And I do think that is how he meant it. My parents married when my mother was from Louisiana and close to Fort Polk. So remember, he was there being trained, and they ended up getting married. And so pretty soon she moved to Oklahoma. She was the daughter of a sharecropper. Now think back how many years ago that has been. In fact, a few years ago, I had the opportunity to go back to her hometown for a family reunion, and it was held at her high school. And being a teacher, I was invited to go into the vault and look at my mother's grade cards because I knew she was very bright. I knew she graduated at the top of her class. But I knew how poor she was, and there would be no hope of her going on to college. That was just unthinkable. And her first grade teacher had written on her report card, Evelyn is a sweet little girl, but she's a slow learner, and she's probably going to have trouble all the way through school. It so crushed me. My mother was not living at that time, and so I just thought back to how beautiful she was and how much she had accomplished in her life. But, you know, she came to Oklahoma, then she moved my grandparents to Oklahoma, and my grandmother was extremely obese. She was diabetic, and she was a pastry chef at the local high school. So she had lots of good, yummy things that she made at the high school, because back then, they really did cook. You know, they didn't just throw some of these fast-serve things on the tray and slap it out to the kids. They really did cook from scratch. And so there were always sweets. There were always pastries around there. And my parents owned their own business, and so they worked long, hard hours. It was a dirty business. They owned 6 dry cleaning shops and lots of commercial laundries. And so when I say it was dirty, it really was dirty. And so my grandmother took care of all of us. But my parents worked quite late. And I would stand at the door. I can remember standing at the door waiting for my parents to come and get me. And I would hear a siren go off. But you know what I associated with that siren? My parents were gone, and they were never going to come and get me. Where did I get that? I have no idea. But in my heart and in my brain, I thought, I love my grandma. She's wonderful. But I love my mama. Why aren't you here, mama? I need you so badly. Well, she always did return. But that fear was put in me from a very, very early age. Let me tell you something else that happened at a very early age. You know, as a teacher, I used to tell parents, children cannot act like adults, but adults can certainly act like children. And I would wake up in the wee hours of the morning when my parents were having coffee in the kitchen, and I would hear my biological father say, "Now in 30 days, everything's going to be okay. In 30 days, we're going to have cash flow, and everything's going to be fine." Well, by then, my parents had moved on up, and we had many wonderful luxuries at our home. And what I heard, because I didn't have any way to filter it, was be afraid. Be on the lookout, because you're probably going to lose all of this. So from a very early age, I learned to do this. Hold on to mama and hold on to every material possession I could. And you know what? That's what has haunted me all my life. My mother, when she was married for 18 years, there was someone prettier and needier that caught the attention of my father. And so after 18 years, she went through a terrible divorce. Terrible. So, remember that man that had called me his little Hereford heifer? Well, now he was gone. And it happened at about the same time as JFK was assassinated. And so I lived in that constant fear of, okay, now I have been abandoned. It did come true. And I lived in that, we're not going to have enough. There's not going to be enough now. Life is very different. You know, I grew up and I was the cheerleader. But about in the ninth grade, because I was eating over all of these fears in my life, I couldn't do the jumps anymore. And I lost that position on the cheerleading squad. I remember the humiliation of that audition. And the pep squad had just run away with the cheer. And I couldn't even get the motions going. And I was just humiliated in front of my peers. So where would I divert all of this fear, all of this worry, all of these struggles? Where could I be recognized? And it was theater. And so I quickly moved into that arena in high school, being in the theater group. And I remember having the lead role in Our Town. I wish so badly that I had had the maturity to go with that lead role of Emily in Our Town. Today I think I could handle it, and I want to go back and read that again. I came to rely on the football player. He was my hero, and he was going to be there for me. He was not going to let me down. But you know what? We married, and after 18 years, we divorced, just like it happened with my mother. And now I was without a can. If you think back where we were culturally back then, the Vietnam War was raging. I had my mother had remarried, and I had a sister, a half-sister that was born 16 years younger. And so when I would take her to the grocery store, I'm sure people were thinking, that poor little girl. Her daddy's gone off to be a soldier, and mama's here with this little girl. And that wasn't the case at all. In fact, she kind of ended up with all the brains. She's the physician in the family, doggone it. But I went through so much loneliness when I went through my divorce, just like I had seen my mother go through. I remember seeing my mother kneeling down by the bed and just crying her eyes out. And I was in that next room wanting so badly to make it better. Can't you just help us, God? Can't you send somebody to help us to let it all be better? And you know what? He did. He sent the most wonderful stepfather that any children could have. I have one biological father who gave me life. I have a who is no longer with me now. Neither fathers are. But I had a wonderful stepfather who taught me how to live life. I told you that I was involved in theater, and I would go off to those speech tournaments and drama tournaments. And there was a young lady, maybe some of you know her. Her name was Candace Early. She was from Lawton, Oklahoma, and she was Donna Beck in All My Children. Does anybody ever remember watching All My Children and seeing Donna Beck? Well, when we competed against each other, she came in first and I came in second, or I came in first and she came in second. And so there was this constant rivalry that went on. We never knew each other. I certainly didn't know how to congratulate someone on putting me in second place. I had no humility whatsoever. Oh dear, how much time? Okay, thank you. But that's how I compensated for my loneliness. And at that 18-year mark, when I lost that wonderful football player that I thought was going to be there forever, where did I go back to? Right back to that little girl who was afraid. Right back to that little girl who thought it was all over. We went from divorce court that morning to bankruptcy court that afternoon. You see, life for us was all about image. He was a pharmacist. So we ran with people in the physician circle who had oodles and gobs more than we ever did. But how do you keep up with that? Well, if you think about it where we were, and I started down this rabbit hole a moment ago, culturally, you know, that charge cards came into vogue about then. And we had a ton of them. In fact, he had 25 of them that he kept in a baggie in the freezer. And so when you have to start pulling all of that stuff out and start seeing, you know, what your life really looked like, it was not a pretty picture. So once again, I turned to food. I was pushed aside for someone who could run faster, jump higher, was much prettier, and was much thinner. I thought he was always going to be there. We had two beautiful little girls that he loved dearly. But that was not enough to hold him to our home. In fact, I used to say, if I could just chain him to this bed. But, you know, it was so far gone by then that there were no chains that could hold him. And I remember also that when I asked him to leave our home, I think this was my first spiritual awakening. I asked him to leave our home because of, you know, what he had done and lied about, and I just couldn't handle it. And so when I said, you know, if you've gotten yourself into a mess, we can work this out. We can get some help and we can work this out. And he said, well, you know, we're just like a football game. You make a game plan and you stick to it. So I said, but you were not doing what you were supposed to be doing. We can work this out. And he was not willing to do that. So I packed his bags, put him on the front porch, and sent him on his way. And what do you think I did? I ate. And I ate. and I ate. Loneliness can cause a lot of poor choices. At least in my life, it caused a lot of poor choices. I had been single for a couple of years, and my best friend in the whole world passed. My mother. She had just had her 60th birthday. She developed cancer, and 16 weeks later, she was gone. And 12 weeks later, my children lost his mother. She had a stroke. So my children lost a father and two beautiful grandmothers. I lost the prestige, the position of where I had been in that marriage, which was all fake, by the way, because it was never paid for. That's why we had to have bankruptcy in order for him to be able to pay for child support with his children. So I've been taking steps all along. And the night that I put him out on the porch, I'd never been by myself. I married at 19, and I'd never been by myself. And I said, God, I'm scared to death. If this house catches fire, wake me up, because I want to be awake to get my children out. So I went to bed, and after a couple of hours of sleep, I was awakened by this bright light coming in through the window. I thought perhaps it was the moon, and I turned to look, but that was not it. The bright light was at the foot of the bed. It had no shape, no form. It was just a bright light. And it said, "You have tried for so long to change him. Now change you." God was knocking, but I wasn't willing to listen. So, shortly after my divorce, my mother passed, my best friend in the whole world. Now what was I going to do? Remember that loneliness I told you about? It made me do some terrible things. I frequented those nightclubs, those night bars, whatever you call those, looking for love in all the wrong places. But at least it would get me out of my loneliness, I thought. It didn't. In fact, I was in one night, and this man, it was where they do the country and western dancing, and I didn't know how to do that, but oh, I loved to watch it. It was so beautiful. And so he said, "Ma'am, you just don't look like you belong here." And I said, "You know what?" But I had on red cowgirl boots, so that should qualify me. Red cowgirl boots that, by the way, were charged. And so I said, "You know what? You're right." And I never went back. So I sat with my food and I sat with my alcohol at the hearth. And every other weekend when my kids were gone, I just totally absorbed myself in escapism. It did nothing but make life worse. Fast forward, two beautiful daughters grow up and marry. I'd prayed and prayed that God would send, you know, someone that would be their equally yoked partner. And I think that we found it so far. We haven't reached number 18. You know, we're trying to break this cycle. But anyway, so grandchildren began to come along. By then, I had retired from teaching and administration, and I'd taken on a consultant's job to travel around the United States, making far more money than I had ever known in my whole life. What do you think I did with it? I told my husband, who I had remarried by then, and by the way, in my prayer journal, I wrote exactly what I wanted in a husband. God gave me all of that and more. And when he asked me to marry him 3 weeks after I met him, I said, no, 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 no. I've made out a list. I've given it to God. And he said, well, let me see it. And so as we started going down through the list, I thought, uh-oh, this is getting too close to home. Uh-oh. And sure enough, he said, when did you write that? And I said, I wrote that June 15th, 1989. And he said, that's my birthday. June 15th is my birthday. And I said, I do not believe you. And he had to get out his driver's license and show me. We met in July, and we were married in November. And so life was good, and I had this big job after a few years, and I was jumping on airplanes and traveling all over everywhere. And it sounds very romantic. It's not. I would call home and say, okay, well, here's what I can do out here on the road. I can eat, I can drink, and I can shop. Well, the eating and the drinking were taken care of by the company, but the shopping was my responsibility. How do you think I did that? By charging it, of course. There was never any education when we got these charge cards back then, you know. And so I became very unhealthy from all of that lifestyle. And I went to the doctor, and she put me on this medication, and she said, I want you to go for this test. Well, while I was waiting for this test, it came to light as I was sitting there waiting. The medication that she had put me on was to prevent heart attack or stroke. And I was like, oh my gosh, she thinks I'm going to die. And so you better believe I got myself into a program that I had heard one person when I had some back trouble and had gone to a therapist for the back trouble. Somebody said, well, you need to ask her what she's doing because it's something that's really working in her. And I, wow, this person's hands were just like the hands of an angel. God's spirit was coming through. And there was this glow about her. And about that same time, there was a baby shower coming up. Well, you know, the only reason I went to weddings, funerals, and baby showers, family reunions. I didn't care a thing about what happened to you over the last year. Where is the food? I want food. And so my friend said, you need to talk to this lady that was going to be at this baby shower. She said, I don't know what she's doing, but she has lost about 136 pounds. Well, when that particular person came waltzing into the room, do you know she had the audacity to walk past the Pinterest table? Everything was so coordinated Pinterest-wise. It was absolutely beautiful. She was radiant, and she just waltzed right past it. She was busy having a relationship with people, stepping in and being involved with people. Now, that's a novel idea. I took the gift as payment for what I knew was going to be on that table, and I was hoping I'd get lots of it. Wasn't long after that I did end up walking through the door of a CHOW meeting, and lo and behold, these two women were in the very same room. They were doing the very same program, and I wanted what they had until I read those tools. I'm supposed to do what? And I'm supposed to do it how? And do you know my schedule? Well, I'm never at the same place at this time. You're just going to have to work around my schedule. I've learned a lot since coming in. I've learned a lot about what it means about stepping up, about working the steps, about living the steps. You know, I remember that I wrote down some things when I was trying to think, now, what are you going to say, Linda? What are you going to say? And there were so many things, and now I can't put my finger on it, but there were so many things in my life that were so topsy-turvy when I went in to see how that what was had happened to me was I had this big hole inside of me. It was called fear. It was called abandonment. It was called, I Want What I Want When I Want It. It was called, I Might Lose What I've Got. And so I could not hear the, when God came calling. But it was See How that led me back to God. And I'm telling you, when you go through the reception line after a great sermon at church and you say to the minister, you know, I've really enjoyed learning from you, but I have to tell you that I've developed a relationship with God that I was only able to get through my 12-step program called See How. Ooh, he's been really nice to me. You know, I don't know that that was very complimentary of his work for the Lord, but I had been walking the world steps that said, I'm going to market you, young lady, for your time and attention. I want your dollars. Okay, it's called plastic, but here it goes. You can have it. I want food. I want alcohol. I want whatever's going to take me away from this. It was not Calgon. That did not give me relief. I was so self-absorbed because that's what the world taught me to be. Just look out for yourself. Be self-reliant. And I was climbing to this top. By golly, I had retired and I was on my way up. I had achieved that six-figure salary. And so this I had to have, and grandkids were coming along, and this I had to have. And I was less and less happy. There was no serenity. There was no peace. There was no joy in my life. Money cannot buy that. If money could have bought my mother's health, I would have stepped up and pulled all the charge cards out for it. But since coming into program, I now know that there are God's steps. I will never forget when I was in a big book study, and I was still trying to get it all figured out, and it said something like, this is a pattern for living. I mean, that I think that was even in quotes in the big book. And I was like, a pattern for living? Aha, that's what's been missing in my life. I had a pattern for dying. I had a pattern for being disconnected with everyone around me. My children tell this story about me, at least one daughter that, you know, she said, Mom, when you would call and say, I'm on my way home from work and I want to see the stripes in the carpet. Anybody know what that meant? I got to be able to see the stripes in the carpet. Okay, I'll tell you. She better have the whole dang house vacuumed. And the wheels on the vacuum sweeper would make the stripes in the carpet. I don't remember that, you guys. And I looked at my husband and I said, Papa, I did not do that. And she said, Papa, tell her. She did do that. So, you know, the roughest of amends that I've had have been with my family. They still look at me and they see the spiritualism. In fact, anytime there is a need for prayer, who do you think they call? Let's call Mama. Mama's going to pray. And I do. And, but they have not, I have two daughters that are beautiful, but they're compulsive eaters. Their father was an alcoholic, drug abuser as a pharmacist. His father was an alcoholic. My biological father was an alcoholic. My grandmother was a diabetic. It was in the cards. My first husband and I never knew how to handle a problem. You know what he figured out very quickly how to handle a problem with me. Well, let's go to dinner and talk about this. Or I brought you this baked good. Let's sit down and talk about it. There was no talking because once I got on that sugar high, you know, I wanted more. And by the way, that is the disease I have, is the disease of more. I told somebody one time that I have an emotional problem that has manifested itself in a physical way, and the only way that I'm going to be able to handle it is through a spiritual path. And that is exactly what See How has given to me, is a spiritual path. I love See How because See How led me to God. And I love each and every one of you. Each and every one of you bring a beautiful memory for me to take away. It was very difficult coming here because, remember that question I asked you? Here it comes. When was the last time you did something for the first time? There have been lots of firsts for me this week. It was my first big trip after two deaths of dear people in my life and leaving my husband and family. I still have fear. I'm sorry. I try to pray about it and prayed that it would be released from me, but I still have fear. And I still want to control at times. I'm a work in progress, but I have a loving God now who says, Linda, when you stand up there today, two things are possibilities. I'll either catch you when you fall, or I'll give you wings and help you fly. I hope it's been the second one, and I'm grateful it hasn't been the first. While we're talking about higher power, I want to just share with you something. One of these deaths involved on my daughter's husband's side of the family, and the grandmother was killed in a terrible automobile accident at age 61. And at the funeral, the grandchildren were just, oh my goodness, they were just so in such suffering. It just broke my heart. And so a few days later, my daughter was driving with the girls in the car, and she said, now girls, make certain that your seatbelt is on. And so the five-year-old says, yes, because we don't want to die like Miss Debbie died. Well, Miss Debbie had on a seatbelt, but she still died. And so the three-year-old, and so my daughter said, now the angels came and got Miss Debbie. She is in heaven. And so the three-year-old says, I'm pretty sure it was not angels that came and got Miss Debbie. I'm pretty sure it was the Iron Man. So the five-year-old says, it was not the Iron Man. It was the angels that came and got Miss Debbie. Gwen, the three-year-old, rolls her eyes, my daughter said, and said, nah, I think y'all got it wrong. It was the Iron Man. So I've been praying to the Iron Man all week. You know, I teach 5 and 6-year-olds on Sunday morning, and there's a reason because of that. They teach me. They are so pure and innocent, and they teach me. And now, instead of being that critical, judgmental teacher that I was at one time, I get the opportunity to sit back and enjoy them and allow them to color a new world for me. A loving God, not the one that sat on the throne with the pen, with the long white beard, writing down every single thing that I had done wrong. The Iron Man loves me. I want to thank you. I don't know how much time do I have left. Seven minutes. Oh, boy. Well, I like to tell grandmother stories, but that was the one that I had planned for today. Otherwise, I would probably bore you to death. But there are so many instances. I could probably take about 7 minutes and tell you that God has put people in my path this week. The last time that I did something for the first time was this week. I was a delegate to the business conference, and it was the most incredible thing that has ever happened to me. I have never witnessed, and thank you so much for your leadership, I have never witnessed a body of people that could discuss things and counter-discuss things and reconsider things and amend things and amend to the amend. And, you know, and when I left Oklahoma City, I had this ferocious headache, and I have been sick to my stomach all week long. And I could hardly stay focused on all that stuff for the first time. And I had studied it, but it was like, oh my gosh, I got to get in the game here. I got to get in the game. But I just couldn't. I was just so, I was in such turmoil about this is for the first time too. And coming to the national conference is for the first time. So there were lots of firsts, and you know, I told you that I was traveling in my job, and I quit that job because it was pushing me over the edge. I made a lot, but I had to walk away from it because it was more than I wanted to handle. I now had five beautiful grandchildren. I wanted time with them. I never made time for my children. I was always busy working. My daughter was on the swim team, and I was working on a doctoral degree, and I went to pick her up one night at the swimming pool, and they said, this is before cell phones. Well, we've been waiting for you to get here. We think Suzanne has a broken leg. I said, what? The coach said, yeah, she slipped and fell in the dressing room, and we think she has a broken leg. So we went to the emergency room. Sure enough, she did, but it had to, you know, the swelling had to go down before they could put the cast on and all that. And so I thought, I will stay at home at least one day and be here for her. And so her room was a wreck. And I lifted up the bed ruffle. You cannot believe the wrappers and the whatever, the dishes and the whatever evidence of food under that bed. Now here's the young child, you know, is like about 7 or 8, and she's laying in the bed with this broken leg, and I am so angry. I said, Suzanne, it is a good thing that you are in bed with a broken leg, because if you weren't, you would have a broken butt. But that's the kind of mom I was. I don't want to be that kind of grandmother. I've been given another chance. So the last time, when was the last time I did something for the first time? I got through that business conference, and I think I'll be much more functional next year than I was this year with the help of one of God's angels and processing with her yesterday how frightened I was to get up here, and with the help of a beautiful roommate, a beautiful sponsor, I was able to let all that go. And you know, the best preparation that I had this morning was to go to the meditation 11th step workshop and get myself focused. This is not about Linda. This is about God through Linda. I am just merely his vessel. That's what I pray to be each and every day. I thank you for this opportunity to have done something for the first time. And God willing, maybe I can be of service another time. Thank you.